Now, as I said just a moment ago, if you have been to a food bank, if you've skipped a meal or eaten less to feed your children, or if you're always worrying about the cost of food over the last year, you have been joined by increasing numbers of people in exactly the same situation. Aoife Moore, to you first. Mm-hmm. The Barnardo's report that was released today, some of the findings pretty stark. Can you give us some of the numbers there that were involved?
Yeah, and I think we're going to see more of this actually now when we see the cost of living crisis really start to bite. So they have doubled from last year in November 2022. It went from 4% to 10% of parents who said that they had used a food bank. 29%, so that's nearly one in three parents, said that they skipped meals or reduced portion sizes so they to ensure their children had enough to eat. 10% increase in the number of parents skipping meals. And one in five parents said they didn't have enough food to feed their family at some point, which is up 15% from this time last year. So it's incredibly depressing. But I honestly do think we're going to see a lot more of this as the crisis keeps going with inflation.
All right. And this is bills and food specifically. Jed Nash, your party is calling for a mini budget, as is People Before Profit. What measures targeted at whom, excluding who, would you like to see to deal with some of this?
Well, Colm, this isn't a new call. I had said pretty much immediately after my own budget response and the development of our own cost alternative budget in late September that there was an inevitability that once the €4 billion of once-off measures melted like snow in a ditch, as they are now over the next few weeks, that people will need additional targeted supports. And this is the problem, you see. The budget itself, while it involved an expenditure of an additional €11 billion, €4 billion plus of that was actually once-off measures. So they didn't actually change the structural kind of challenges that we have in society in terms of deprivation, in terms of relative poverty, in terms of long-term issues that families have been experiencing for a long, long time. Families that have been in a permanent crisis, cost of living crisis over the last few years. We've got what you might describe as a two-tier economy now, two-tier society developing. You've got some people are doing really, really well. The economy itself is doing really, really well objectively, but you can't eat good GDP figures. What we need to do now, I think, is, you know, return to the drawing board. And I would advise the Minister for Finance and the Minister for Public Expenditure Reform to take some of the advice we proffered to them last September. When you have below inflation social welfare increases, you are going to further embed poverty.
All right.
When you have below rate of inflation, minimum wage increases, you are going to embed poverty.
That's the tip of the spear for you, is it? To bring social welfare up in line with inflation and increases to the minimum wage in line with inflation as a priority measure.
There are two measures that could be taken very quickly in a mini budget to actually fundamentally address the experience of people who are living in poverty.
Matty McGrath, would you support those measures if they were if they were to be introduced?
Yes, because clearly the budget, once-off measures, and they're most of them running out, as Jed said, like snow off a ditch. But we know the snow has fallen and we know when it's going to go. The end of February, which is only 20 days away. I've raised this to the end of the door with the Taoiseach, and he says, oh, we're looking at it and we will in 10 days. People need certainty. People are suffering from mental health. Like proud people being forced to food banks. People that never dreamed that they'd be in this situation. And just because of the costs have outstripped what they're earning and they're less bang for their buck with their euro, cost of food is alarming, the cost of travel, cost of everything. And indeed, the children going back to school and you know, these are people that wouldn't be...
So that's quite a wide range of measures. You too would then support a mini budget, would you?
Well, I think nothing less will do now, because we knew at the time, and I also said it in my budget response, that in our budget response to rural independence, that like this was going to run out and the costs were increasing every day, and they are. They made no real effort to, you know, to control those costs. And we could have taken different measures, as we saw from the EU toolbox, that we could have done, even with the carbon tax and different issues, for the time being, to get people over the hump.
Nasa Harrigan, it looks like there could be a compelling case for a mini-budget, doesn't it? Because we've seen in recent days potential calls for redress schemes, although that's obviously yet to be determined. We see the energy credit about to run out, and you know, more costs coming down the track as inflation, the rate of it is slowing down, but it's still growing.
No, and as Aoife says, I have to agree. I think that we are facing into a number of months where we will continue to be challenged by the issue. I think we can kind of get caught up in the phrase of a mini budget, but I think the government is open to further measures, which is effectively a mini budget. And that is why there has been money kind of, you know, we obviously had, you know, good tax receipts this year, and there is money there to possibly uplift people again. And we saw, you know, that 1 billion in social welfare in terms of the double payment for the October bonus and child benefit and lump sums for fuel allowance. I think that there's a really, really worthwhile point in it around the rate of welfare more generally. And now, personally, of course, we would like to, I personally would love to see welfare move further closer to inflation, but I don't want to see that in itself as a one-off measure. We've been pushing very hard on the Committee on Budgetary Oversight to get the government to engage with the idea of indexation so that every year, year on year, social welfare won't be left behind, and it won't be a political decision every year. Are you going to add a fiver onto the pension? Are you going to add €2 or €3 onto child benefit? It's indexed against what inflation would be, and it's set.
And given that this survey was taken in November 2022, we had, as it says, 1 in 10 parents had used food banks, 29% of parents skipping meal or reducing portion sizes to ensure the children had enough to eat, that they had done that for a year. So this emergency that's been described here is already 3 months old. We're into another quarter of that. So people in those situations looking for immediate relief, what's the hopeful story that you and your colleagues in government can tell them?
Well, first of all, I don't know if we can categorise it as a hopeful story, because people are really hurting, and I think that that's true. I think one realistic target that can be, or piece of work that can be done is before Christmas, the Taoiseach announced a unit within the Taoiseach's office for child poverty and well-being, and it's supported by Minister Roderick O'Gorman. Now, we saw in the UK, now I know that they've scrapped it since under a Conservative government, but when they had that in the UK, that really did place a focus on child poverty. It managed to set targets and really deal with that issue. So I know that he has already begun the process of that meeting of meeting people, and that unit is set to be up and running in the first quarter of this year. I think that would be really meaningful.
No more than people can't eat GDP, they can't eat targets.
No, they
either.
Absolutely can't, but we have to make sure that where there is money, and there is money to spend, there is money to give people, and I agree with the criticism around it being a one-off measure, but until we have a unit that specifically focuses on child poverty targets, we won't know if we're putting that money to the right use.
Matty McGrath?
Look, I heard Minister Ryan myself on the radio 2 weeks ago saying that he wasn't in favour of extending the credits, the one-off, the payments as regarding the fuel. Like 88% of our fuel comes from fossil fuel. So, I mean, we have to live in the real world. And it's, the more you put on fuel, and if he withdraws those, and that, I know there's an argy-bargy going on with Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens about this, but people want certainty, and they want to know that they'll be able to drive their car, and they want to know they'll be able to go to work. It's costing notices, and it won't jump up again if they take away those supports.
I didn't think we would get the fuel so quickly, but I would just also like to point out, and you said it yourself earlier, you know, we're talking about tax receipts and we're talking about GDP, and, you know, Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach, his favourite thing to say is, you know, we've got full employment now, but like we had a report last year that said a third of people below the poverty line were in work. So there is a genuine issue here, not just with, you know, whether people have a job, but low wages as well. And we're seeing that more and more with every Bernardo's report that comes out. It is working people that are put to the pin of their collar. Not that it's any better when people aren't working.
Like we have about 23% of all Irish people who are working who are considered to be earning below what would be a reasonable wage. There are always OECD stats. It used to be the case that the political consensus was that once you had a job, then that was your route out of poverty. But that's proven not to be the case in recent years, as the divide has grown. And I describe it as a divide because there are people in this society who are doing very, very well. Objectively, the economy is doing very, very well. We have technical full employment. There's an issue, though, underneath the bonnet, if you look at it, about job quality. There's no doubt about that. But yesterday, Minister McGrath, amid great fanfare, salted away €4 billion of last year's surplus into the so-called rainy day fund. I've news for Minister McGrath. He will know this himself as a constituency TD, as somebody who listens carefully to what's happening in his own constituency, in his own clinics, in his own office. It's raining today for far too many people in this country, and they need support.
Okay, you know, well, on that subject, somebody has texted into us on 51551 sitting here tonight with my four kids, freezing myself and my partner eat just one small meal a day. Kids get lunch, dinner and breakfast, supper. Dinner, breakfast and supper scrapped for all of us. My own health has gone downhill. Kerosene is costing an obscene 140 a litre, 85 cents of this. It's tax. Can't afford to put diesel in the car. Four kids pulled away from all sports and matches as we don't have the disposable income to pay for this and get to the various matches. Nessa Harrigan, that's somebody in an emergency situation, and much and all, as a unit is being established, people want to hear that emergency measures perhaps are coming.
I don't think that emergency measures are out of the question. I think that the government is considering emergency measures. I think that we do need to make sure that those measures, that we're not here again in 4 or 5 months, and that it's yet another conversation about one-off measures that just get people through another few weeks. We need to set up a system whereby people are supported in the long term, and that is seen as something that is useful to government and is actually, you know, supporting people's well-being in the long term.
All right, Jed Nash, would you be encouraged at all? Because yesterday when the private, or today, sorry, when the private members bill on mortgage interest relief was being discussed, Michael McGrath, the finance minister, said that he wants, you know, people to be treated fairly, but that the government couldn't spend 655 million because things can't be viewed in isolation from other tax and expenditure measures which are due to expire. It would sound perhaps like there is a plan in the making.
Well, that's what I'm saying, you know, and let's not be put off by terminology here. You know, if it looks like a mini budget and it talks like a mini budget, it should be a mini budget. When I talk about a mini budget, I talk about looking at things in a holistic way, how different policy decisions feed into an impact on other decisions. And that's why if you're looking at this in a round, it needs to involve examination of taxation measures, of social welfare measures and public.
And would you put that mortgage interest relief into the mix, by the way?
I am sceptical about expenditure on mortgage interest relief, and history has shown us and told us why we should be sceptical. I said this evening, and the Labour Party will be supporting the principle of the Sinn Féin motion, it is an attempt to try and have a discussion about what needs to be done to help hard-pressed mortgage holders. But the last time we resourced mortgage interest relief back in 2013, I think the expenditure level was about 500 million euros. And the reality is that a disproportionate amount of that money goes to the better off. Okay, those who have bigger mortgages, larger houses, and therefore larger assets. Right. So I think
is there a special case to be made for people on 7% interest rates on their mortgages?
Well absolutely, and this is the point that I made in the Dáil earlier on when I spoke on this. Now, to be fair, that motion and the basis on which we're supporting it is that it would be time limited and it would be targeted and it would be capped as well.
All right.
To make but I'll say this: I reminded Minister McGrath today. One thing that he could do is actually examine the Labour Party's mortgage cap bill that we published last year, which is very similar to a bill he developed himself when he was Fianna Fáil spokesperson on finance in 2015 and 2016, okay, amid great fanfare, to cap high mortgage interest rates. And there's no doubt about it, people who have been charged 7% in terms of, you know, those whose mortgages have been managed by funds now, they need special attention. Right. I didn't hear anything from the Minister today to give me any confidence that that's going to be dealt with.
We'll come back to Aoife Moore.
Yeah, this isn't my speciality at all. I think I can safely say I'm the only person on this panel who doesn't have a mortgage, and I'm likely never to have one because I'm 30. So I had a look under this today, and the OECD actually said that mortgage interest relief does not raise home ownership rates. It results in higher house prices where housing supply is constrained. I can't think of anywhere where more constrained than right here. And it says that mortgage interest relief encourages purchases of larger and more valuable homes rather than supporting new entrants into the market. That is not something that we need.
All right, Nessa Harrigan, what's your view on mortgage interest relief?
When I saw this mortgage interest rate flash up on my phone, I actually thought it was a Fine Gael proposal and I was going to shoot it down. Oh. This is bonkers. This is a bonkers proposal. I think I described it to a colleague as effing bonkers. I cannot believe this is a Sinn Féin proposal, and I can't believe that Labour and the Soc Dems are actually supporting it. It is a transfer.
And even though they're not here to defend themselves, you wouldn't be surprised if a so-called bonkers proposal, in your own words, came from Fine Gael.
Well, I would say that this is a very fiscally conservative proposal. It transfers public money from people who are renters to people who are lucky enough to own a home, and these are also the people that Sinn Féin don't want to pay any tax on.
655 million, that's you, according to the finance minister, you buy that as the cost of it, would you?
I would say that that's much more realistic than the numbers Sinn Féin have given.
Look, in all the debates that's going on, we know whose friends the government are. The bankers. They get back the bankers' bonus. The last act of Pascal Donohoe, did a very lefty job was to give back the bonuses to senior bankers and the appalling. I've seen the money they're getting. So why? I mean, he can't.
Well, not all bankers. Bankers that had exited ownership of the state.
Yeah. Yes. Sorry, but a large proportion of them and a quite a handsome threshold of income. So why don't look after the smaller people? And because we didn't mention that. You did, I think, or someone did. They're working poor. They're, and not only those, but you have small families.
My priority.
You have self-employed people. And they're on their knees, and they're too proud to.
This is public money, Matty.
I know it's public money.
This isn't the bank's money. No, this is public money. This is taxpayers' money.
Let them finish the point.
I'm just saying that they're out there as well, and they're even pride is a big thing for them. The good business is going. They're being hammered because the same public that we're talking about that can't afford to live. They haven't the money to spend in jobs.
In a nutshell, do you think everybody should get mortgage interest relief, or do you think the 7%ers should get mortgage interest relief?
I think the people on the higher rates that are suffering now, they're really being squeezed.
All right.
The Taoiseach does say today, you know, it is people on tracker mortgages and stuff that are going to be bearing the brunt of this, and I think there is an argument for that. But the
Fifteen years of people paying incredibly low mortgage payments, and now their rates are. But I got a great rate for years.
Some of those 15 years were spent in the teeth of a recession as well. But they were paying their head above the water.
Sure. Ultimately, most EU countries who have mortgage interest rates are desperately trying to get out of them. They're phasing them out because they're incredibly hard to wind down, and they are not good value for money.
All right.
There are lots of different things that are, you know, coming to an end. There's a cliff edge now at the end of February.
Well, the eviction ban as well. Yeah.
And that's, you know, we have a motion tomorrow with the Labour Party in relation to housing. We'll be debating it all tomorrow evening. And, you know, what we want to do is see the eviction ban extended to the end of this year. You know, greater action in terms of CPOing vacant property and you know, returning that into proper housing use. And also, you know, stepping up the tenant in situ scheme, which actually has worked well, right, where it works and with local authorities.
And Nessa Harrigan,
immediate things that we can do to actually help people.
How do you think those measures will be received? Can you see the eviction ban being extended?
I would like to see the eviction ban be extended.
Will you vote for the government if they decide?
I am a whipped person, so unfortunately.
You're not always a whipped person.
I'm not always a whipped person. But I do, I think there are some things in the motion. I would suspect
that the minister
would say...
Do you think the government will act? Well, I know, but do you think
the government with their own counter motion?
Will the counter motion contain this?
Well, no, it doesn't.
It doesn't. Okay.
Tonight,
sorry, but this motion doesn't end the eviction ban either way. So I think there are things that the minister would say in this motion that he's already doing. So things like beginning a public house building programme, he would say he was already doing, commencing rapid compulsory purchase order. I mean, that's what this planning bill about to come up is doing. But there's also stuff like kind of, Labour's homeless families bill on reorganising the housing list. And I think that might actually cause more disruption than it would solve problems.
Well, that measure actually was first announced and first introduced by John O'Sullivan, actually, when John was housing, which had the backing of all of the housing NGOs and indeed I think the Green Party at the time. So it's something we'd ask the Green Party to reflect on. In any case, there was actually considerable amount of cross-party kind of consensus about that, and I think that can be done. So what we're talking about tomorrow night is some of the immediate things that we can do to help people who are in crisis now. I've seen the government's counter-motion, and it's essentially kind of rehearsal of all of the of Housing for All and all of the things the government are doing and say they are doing at the moment. I mean, we're really concerned about the kind of inadequacy of the targets that have really been outpaced now by the recent census figures that actually shows, and our motion refers to this, we should probably be targeting about 50,000 new bills each year and not the 30,000 that Housing for All is referring to. And a doubling of social and affordable homes.
Nessa Harrigan there mentioned the... but firstly, the eviction ban, Matty McGrath. Would you be supporting the Labour motion on this, the extension?
Yes,
you will.
Certainly, because look, things haven't got any easier. They've got much worse, in fact, since it was, it was less extended. So we can't possibly remove it now in this. And you might say, when are we going to remove it? But not now because of the deepening crisis.
And the compulsory purchase order of houses to put them into the system for rental or otherwise would support that?
I had concerns about that. Yeah, I would have concerns about that because, you know, people that are out there that have paid their taxes and built their houses themselves, you know, if they're homes, if they're holiday homes or second homes are...
Is it vacant properties you're talking about, Jed Nash? Just to be very briefly, is it?
Yeah, derelict properties. We actually...
Okay. Loud County Council has been
great at that over the last few years. Loud County Council have been pioneering. It's slowed down, I think, over the last while, but it's actually doable and it's actually a reasonably straightforward way of getting bring derelict and vacant properties
every town
back into
use. Derelict buildings and premises that weren't, some of them might have accommodation over the shops. The scheme's been announced, but they were never really taken up. We need to work on that, certainly, because it's, you do two things. You bring back a living town or village again, but you'd also improve the aesthetics of town. Like, every town is suffering from that, and we need that area, but there are buildings that are not used, and if the owners don't want to use them or do anything with them, we have to have some cut-off point.
I would just ask, and I don't know if this has been asked of the government yet, if they're not going to support Labour's motion to extend the eviction ban, and we know, because it's been happening already, that there is going to be a wave of evictions when this stops, where are those people going to go?
All right.
We don't have enough emergency accommodation to house the people that we have at the minute. So where are those people who are all going to be affected? Where are they going to go?
Okay, Nessa Harrigan, your party's in government. Do you want to
yeah,
stand
no,
with
I think that?
That's
a fair question, which is why we'd be advocating for it to be extended. But, I mean, we are seeing rising homelessness figures, particularly in Dublin. We're heading in and around the 11 and a half, is it 12? Yeah. And it is a good question. And in the face of, you know, even more international people coming to the country, we possibly don't want to open that particular floodgate right now.
Right.
There is a vacant homes action plan column that was published last week, but it doesn't actually have any targets for restoring vacant homes for this year. That's kind of extraordinary. I mean, our argument
is 150 million budget announced last week.
But there are actually no targets in the government plan for this year to return the homes into use. And just sorry, if just one point I think is worth making about this. This is all eminently doable. We have a vacant property tax now coming in a couple hundred quid a year. It's not going to dissuade anybody who obviously has deep enough pockets to allow a property to
accelerator and go straight CPO,
So I really think, the measures need to be punitive. Our concern is that since the eviction ban was brought in, homelessness has actually gotten worse. There's record
11,632
since the eviction ban was introduced, perversely, and there's no direct causal relationship, but the point I'm making is that government don't appear to have used those few months to actually get on top of this to make sure that, even if they were minded not to extend the eviction ban, that there were more properties
Matthew McGrath, you want to come in on this?
Matt Falk will score on that issue. At least the government has put down a counter motion. I'm sick and tired the last number of months of just accepting the motions, agreeing the motions, and saying they're going to agree with the motion and implement, and they just shred them up, put them into the bin. And that's really frustrating in the last 6, 8, maybe even 12 months. And at least this has got to the good motion Labour have, and the government at least has the gumption to put down a counter motion, and we can have a debate and a vote if necessary. Now, but agreeing something that they have no intention of doing is not a nice pattern. I had crept in there, and it's not good for politics either.
Agreement, no good for politics. I know what you're saying. And Nessa Horrigan, the planning bill that you mentioned there, you were speaking approvingly of it. Was that in the context?
I was not speaking approvingly of it.
Well, you said something. Is it the CPO?
There are measures.
It sounded approving. Sorry, but you want to clarify. You absolutely do not approve of it.
Well, look, the planning bill is 700 pages, which means that it's about the same size as all the planning legislation we already have. Right?
Have you read it?
I have not read all of it because it's 700 pages, but I
but
do
you
notice,
already don't like the
but
bits
I,
you've
but
read.
But I do notice that the committee who have to do the pre-legislation scrutiny have 15 hours effectively to read and scrutinise and review 700 pages of legislation. There's plenty of those 700 pages that I have major, major problems with.
Okay. Everybody, are we?
Yeah, no, I have as well.
You have.
It's so big.
Too much. 700 pages.
Okay. There's a debate on it. And look, we should sort out issues in Bord Pleanála before we do this. I'm just saying, I know we need it, but there are huge issues and a lack of confidence in the planning
too much
system.
Too much in the time allowed?
That limited amount of pre-legislative scrutiny is always worrying from a democratic oversight point of view. And this is a radical departure in terms of, our understanding of planning legislation, regulations and where it's going.
Consolidating power with the minister. It's taking plans out of councillors' hands.
10-year development plans rather than 5-year development plans. I'm a bit suspicious about that. The judicial review issue is a big concern for all of us who are concerned about democratic oversight and the separation of powers between the Oireachtas and judiciary. People have a right to take a case to the courts.
Yeah,
this is a republic. Constitution, they've got that right. And I think we interfere with that at our peril.
Okay, so another listener, a fan of the CPO, housing, silver bullet, CPO all the mobile homes on beaches and holiday homes, CPO them all, says one listener texting into us.
Mobile homes are not housing.
I'm I'm merely
CPO any of us have dealt with it, and I have with roads and things. It's a crude vehicle, and it's best divided, and if at all possible, look, you have to use it, you have to use it.
All right, okay, we're going to have a look at the issue of immigration, which was mentioned there earlier after this.
The Late Debate with Cullum O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.